Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Conroy. Albert Breer's here. I was just getting done telling Albert one of my favorite stories from my youth about, well, the discussion was about how the youth sports scene right now disallows for intra-town rivalry.
Right. We had anymore. It was like basically if your kid shows like an inch of potential that he might be able to keep playing into like the sixth grade, then all of a sudden you have to send him to five different states to play games in a 7-month span.
Sorry, son, you seem to have an aptitude with throwing the baseball. You're going to live at IMG Academy now. Your mother and I will miss you. But so my little league, we had this great place, Dave Parker Memorial Stadium, which is now a series of condominiums. Does not exist anymore. It got knocked down. But it had a green monster in right field. It was very cool. And after games, there was like an area that for about 3 weeks was used to settle disputes that were generated from Little League games. And so you would fight by the dumpsters that were like, if I'm remembering correctly, like somewhere like in left field, behind left field near the parking lot. And one fight, I don't know why I just brought this up with Albert, but that there was this one kid who was clearly bigger than the other kid. And for extra insurance, he, before the fight, took his shoes off and filled the shoes, like the toes of the shoes, with like the the rocks from the parking lot. You know, like the kind of like the medium sized like rocks that are like.
Just for clarity's sake, this is now the third time I've heard this story in the last like 20 minutes. I'm still like losing it, like hearing it.
It's so like
he's,
amazing.
He's like creating his own steel-toed boot, right? Like
kind of. And then obviously exactly what you thought would happen, which is, you know, you just end up smashing your own toes. And then really you've put yourself in an extraordinary disadvantage for the fight because I had to go home. So I had heard about what happened.
It limits your mobility to some degree.
Right. Like, think about it. Like, you kick the guy with the shoe full of rocks, and then the rocks just end up
slide under the feet in your foot.
Yeah. They just end up spraying underneath your, like, the archway of your foot. And then some guy is going to punch you, and you're trying to backtrack while also stepping on the rocks. And then, meanwhile, like, all of your toenails are probably, like, just absolutely hammered.
Yeah, it looks
bloody.
Like your feet suddenly look like you just got done climbing Everest. Like
it was Oh man, what a legend. I was just such a
how old were you guys? I don't think you
like 11?
That sounds about right. Like, that right? would be the age where stuff like that would happen, yeah.
Right, like, 11 is peak, you know. Like, I remember we had a dude who at a game, like a dad, who put his car key in between his knuckles and then turned around and punched a parent from the other team. It was All-Stars, oh. Little League All-Stars. And so essentially, basically, just creating a knife in between. So I'd never heard that one before. Basically, like, car key between your knuckle.
That's interesting. So it's like almost like a, what would that be? There's a weapon that's like that, isn't there?
But it's not like a brass
probably
knuckle.
Probably from a video game. Like, I...
It's like, it's probably like something that you got with a code from Grand Theft Auto,
right? Like, you know? Like, or Ryu from Street Fighter. Like, yeah. there's some sort of like way you can kind of arm him with that. You know what I mean?
So I think there was just a lot of animosity in the air maybe that summer. Like, it was just a hot summer, and we were all a little hyped up. You know,
I actually had that conversation with somebody. There was there have been some heated discussions. Like, I watched at a Just for Fun hockey tournament. I watched a kid get thrown out of a game, and then the dad wait by the door so he could yell at the ref. This is for a hockey tournament in May. So I've seen these scenes play out plenty. And I had this conversation with somebody just a couple days ago, a buddy of mine, like a dad in town. And I was like, we had the discussion, what would it take for you in your 40s to get into a fist fight? And I think my answer is my family's in danger.
100%.
I think that's where I'm at. Like, and I got into fights when I was in middle school, high school, all the way up. Like, I've been in more dumb fist fights than I like want to remember. College, like the bar fights, all that. Like, at this stage of my life, I think it would take a family member or family members being in some sort of danger for me to actually physically fight somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. I think and who knows? I don't know. I would have to get to that place. The last time I almost got into a fist fight was at the Broncos Seahawks Super Bowl.
Okay.
Do you remember the media setup was there was like a yacht you had to interview?
Yeah. And like Jersey, right? Like, it was like by like the West in Jersey City or whatever.
Yeah. So I was doing a story on, there were like four or five XFL players in that mm-hmm. game. It's a cool story. Yeah. And I was going to try to get Vince McMahon. I ended up not getting him. But Paris Lennon, I think, was like the middle linebacker for the Broncos that year.
Yeah.
And so I got all the way to the front. So they were sitting at like a little table. And then there was like a big crowd because we were on a yacht. So it was very small. Thanks, NFL. And so it took about half an hour for me to get to the back of the line, to the front of the line. Just had to ask him one question about the XFL. And there was a camera guy, I want to say from NFL Network, but I'm not entirely sure. While I was talking to him, kept grabbing me on the shoulder and turning away.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I think we've all been there.
Yeah, I was like, give me a second, you know, and then did it again. And I was like, just give me one second. Did it a third time. And I was like, dude, you know, and the guy, like, I think we were both just having a bad day. The Super Bowl's stressful. And the guy was like, I'm going to be waiting for you when I get off this yacht. And I was like, good. And, you know, I was like, let's go. And poor Paris Lennon is just standing there like, what on earth is wrong with these people? I ended up not seeing him. It was funny. Right after that, I waited for the chance to speak with the hot young assistant of the day, one Broncos offensive coordinator, Adam Gase, for a fun little story that I ended up doing on Gase before the Super Bowl. So time flies, you know, it's almost 10 years later.
But we've all been in those situations where the camera guy like tries to move you aside, and they're always like those guys have hard jobs. So I'm not like,
yes.
I mean, it's their one job is to get the shot. And if people are in the shot, then they did a bad job. And I can understand, especially in a setting like the Super Bowl, the stress of that. But those guys, like, a lot of times have like pads and braces and stuff on too. So they're kind of, and they're usually really big guys.
Yes.
You know, like, so, yeah, we've all been in those situations before where space is at a premium. And those guys are like making, like, you know, like Kevin McHale under the hoop. to try to get position.
There's no way to adequately explain to someone. We're going to talk about the NFL today, by the way. yeah. We're doing best off-season moves, worst off-season moves. We did a lot of fun roundtables at Sports Illustrated, which you can check out, and we're going to talk about that as we get going here. But it's impossible to explain to somebody the sort of like trying to get a rebound aspect of like being in a scrum, trying to ask a player a question for a story, and then like you're fighting with the camera people, everybody's mad, someone smells, like, you know, it's all bad. And then the one person,
someone ripped one,
someone farted, and then the only person that is holding the player's attention undividedly ends up being this guy from, like, you know, at the Super Bowl. It's like ends up being
ABC
some guy
3.
No, it's somebody from like Austria who comes and is like, you know, and asks Aaron Donald if he can slap him in the face, you know? And I mean, that was a thing that he asked Aaron Donald to play slaps. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I do remember that. Yeah.
I forget where that guy was from, like Denmark maybe, or Austria.
Yeah.
Or it some was. Are they even near each other?
Denmark, it wasn't one of like the wasn't one of the brand name European countries like Germany or England. It was
it wasn't one of the brand name European countries.
It's kind of like an offbeat European country. My mom's from one. No offense to anybody here. My mom's from Austria. So, but yeah, it was from one of the non brand name countries. The other thing that can be a little annoying too, and why I just don't even try get the podiums on media night anymore. Like I just spend the time networking and seeing people and everything else, is like Michael Irvin climbing over like the barrier and like walking right up and like sticking the microphone right, like, and then having like a 5-minute conversation with the guy. It's like, thanks.
Hey, I'm not waiting in that line. So
yeah,
I'm good. Denmark, by the way, fit.
As if Michael Irvin couldn't have gotten the guy like the half hour before they all went out.
Oh no, possible. Yeah. Denmark, by the way, Albert, is 14 hours and 51 minutes. 14-hour and 51-minute drive from Austria.
That's a long drive. Yeah.
It's not bad. It's like,
although by American standards, it's not. Like, that would be like driving from Boston to Chicago, probably. I'd probably be around that. Yeah.
So you go through Germany, it looks like. And then,
well, so like that's the thing. It's like that's why my mom knows 5 languages, and the reason why is because like where she grew up in Vienna, it's like you drive 1.5 hours and it's a different language, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
So I wouldn't be able to hit Luxembourg, no Belgium there. It's just straight through Germany, and then.
But Denmark's one of those that I think's into the NFL. I think that's right. I know Austria is.
You kind of graze the Czech Republic too, which is neat. You kind of get in there. Who knows? We'll all have.
I would advocate for driving through Europe. Driving through Europe is great. Like I took the advice. It was actually Jason Cole, formerly of Yahoo, of the Miami Herald, who gave me and my wife advice when we were dating, when we were making a trip over to see my family over there, to drive and not take the train, which is like the opposite of the way most people think to do it. And the trains are really easy in Europe, but just the one time doing it by car and getting to stop at all like the little places along the way was really cool.
That is cool.
See, you get travel advice here too.
Yeah, travel advice, fighting tips. Don't put rocks in your shoes, everybody. We are going to...
Might backfire.
We're going to start with the best off-season move. Yep. And I'll say this. I've been to mini camps already. Like, it's happening. We're here.
Practice has started. That's what I mean.
Practice has started.
OTAs, like, they have all these fancy terms for them. Right, OTAs mini camp. OTA is the start of football. OTAs is the start of football practice. Now they're not wearing pads; they can't hit, but they can go 7-on-7, 11-on-11. So OTAs and mini camp is the start of football practice.
Yeah, we are here. It's very much like all the practices I've seen so far. It's we're here. Like it's already started. You know, it's funny how you know, and I can see how some players would end up liking the straight shot into training camp, like just starting now and just going straight through the season if you ended up getting April and May, March, April, May totally off. But I know you and I have a different take on this, and I think a lot of other coaches do.
Like, can you imagine if camp started right now?
Ugh.
That would fucking... Whoops, that would suck.
Beep!
Shelby, you can beat me on that. This is an emotional topic for me. I am... This is my crusade.
So
no on that proposal.
I'm going to run down what we did a whole staff roundtable.
Yep.
And the best offseason move, Matt Verderame, staff writer for the MMQB, said the Dallas Cowboys not extending Dak Prescott. Very surprising.
That's an interesting curveball there, yeah.
He said Prescott hasn't made a serious run yet at a Super Bowl. Dallas should be ultra-aggressive and find his replacement in the next 24 months by free agency or the draft and hope that the quarterback has a higher ceiling. Interesting.
I would say, like, I've made this comparison a few times, but I sort of feel like it almost feels like maybe the Cowboys are with Dak Prescott right now where the Rams were with Jared Goff going into 2020.
You think so?
They really like him? Yeah, they really like him. They really like him. And obviously there's the age difference and everything else, and Dak's way more experienced. But, you know, like, I just think that there's the – like, Dak's a really good quarterback. But are you at the point now where you feel like we got to start looking around? And who knows what would have happened with Jared Goff if Matthew Stafford doesn't come available, right? Like, so – you can't count on, like, Matthew Stafford falling out of the sky. Of course, the difference here is that Dak is going into a contract year, you know? Like, so if you are going to move on, like, then, you know, you're really kind of flying blind into 2025. So anyway, but I think there is some similarities in sort of the way that those two guys are viewed internally, Goff by the Rams back then and maybe Prescott now.
I think it's going to be wild when some team pays Dak Prescott $65 million a year in free agency and he possibly wins the Super Bowl. This is not to say I disagree with Matt. I wrote that it's inexcusable that Dallas has not extended him. I think it's financially irresponsible. And then there's a made up looking website that disagreed with me and,
it's somehow being amplified on Twitter.
You were so confident and you wanted to take a shot at something or someone, and then you're just like, in real time, you're like, you know what?
I probably shouldn't do that.
Let's just put the sword back in there.
Like, who am I swinging at here? Like, let me take a look at that. And then it's like, wow, I'm really an idiot for getting that upset over this.
I got a shoe full of rocks. I'm ready to go. Gilberto Manzano said the best move of the offseason was the San Francisco 49ers not trading Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk. I agree with Gilberto in the sense that, like, you're going to need all the you lost some defensive firepower. You're going to need all the help that you can get to make another run here at the Super Bowl. I think their window has kind of passed. I mean, they did redo the Christian McCaffrey extension. Like, everybody is, they're behaving like a team whose window still exists, you know? And if you get anything out of Ricky Pearsall, this team's going to be really hard to cover, you know?
I think part of it for me is, like, I think this might wind up coming down to what they can get. Like, well, first of all, can they get Ayuk signed, right?
Right.
And then second of all, if they can get Ayuk signed, what does someone offer for Deebo? In other words, like, to me, it's like, can somebody offer you something for Deebo that's so compelling that you're willing to take him off this year's team? Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds simplistic, but with the opportunity they have in front of them, I think that's the way you have to look at it, right? Like, if you're getting a first round pick back for him, you feel like, maybe we can get a premium player under cost control for the next 4 years. We know we've got these big contracts on our books with, you know, presumably Brock Purdy's coming next offseason. So we're going to need more players like that. So this would be the ideal time to have multiple first round picks, right? Because then we have more capital to go and get guys that'll fit under our financial reality. So I think that's sort of what it comes down to. It's like, 1 year versus the next four when it comes to valuing Deebo, you know? And of course, there's the other side of it, which is, you know, if you're going to just trade him after the year, what are you going to be able to get for him then? And you got to do your own assessment and how he's going to hold up. Because if you feel like that first round pick, he's about to have like a career year, and that first round pick will still be there in February, well, then you keep him, you know? But again, that's all predicated on hang on to Ayuk, which I think would be their priority right now.
I did the Lions signing DJ Reader, mm-hmm. and I felt good about this take. And then at Peter King's retirement party, I ran it by Andy Benoit, who is our schematic football savant, formerly of the MMQB, now of the 33rd team. But I did a coaching stint with the Rams. And I said, Andy, I like to run all my football takes by you. It makes me feel a little bit better. Lions signing DJ Reader, best move of the offseason. And he was with it. So
now, nice.
DJ Reader possibly not going to be ready until training camp. So we're not going to be able to see him on the field.
Right.
This might be like a, you know,
but you know,
run down
what,
like to the last minute thing, you know?
You know what I love about it? Like, it's like a Ravens type of move, right? And I think signing Zeitler was too, right?
Yes.
Like, where the Ravens over the last few years have done great signing third contract veterans, right? So it's like, I mean, you can go back and you can see their history with it, but like, you know, your Kyle Van Noy's, your Jadeveon Clowney's, you know, if you want to go further back, your, you know, your Earl Thomas's, like on offense, obviously Odell Beckham fits into that category. Zeitler did fit into that category. Mark Ingram at one point fit into that category. And, you know, really the reason that the Ravens have done it is because they feel like, A, you know what you're getting from those guys, and they're not going to, based on, like they've already been paid, so you're not guessing on how they're going to handle having money, right? Like, so right. You have an idea there. And generally, if you last that long, you've got some leadership ability. So you're bringing in a guy who's going to be a leader. And yeah, maybe it's for only for a year or two, but that's what most free agent signings are, you know? And a lot of times these guys are top of the roster or were top of the roster type players, whereas most of the guys who make it to free agency as second contract guys are not top of the roster players. Otherwise, they would have been re-signed by their teams. Reader feels like one of those signings to me. You know what I mean? Like, Reader feels like that. All right, we got a really good core, and we're going to supplement them with like just middle of the fairway veteran signings where we know exactly what we're getting.
It's just one of those deals where, I don't know, I just see him making a tackle like 4 yards in the backfield at some mm-hmm. critical point deep in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
you, Albert,
did yep.
the Giants trading for Brian Burns, which I agree was probably my second. So there's a lot of Giants
buzz.
It was,
lots of people talking
about
the Giants.
No, it was either somebody too that who I really loved. It was either Nate Tice or Chris Long. And I don't know why I'm equating the two of them. I mean, well, they both played high level ball. They're both great, you uh-huh. know. One of the two of them was like, it was talking about how like scary this roster was and how terrifying it was. And I have to dig deep into it because I totally appreciate the way that both of them think and talk football. Mm-hmm. I was just very, you know, I'm into this Giants team. I really am. Like,
I think
this defense is going to be really good. Like, we did our division predictions and I didn't blink at the idea of them finishing in second place.
Yeah. And I think that the interesting thing about the Burns thing, you know, you always like, I think like one of the biggest things to ask with like young free agents or young players that become available is why they were available in the first place. Right. And I just think it's really easy to explain with Burns, where it was the contract and it was a situation where a player was coming up for a contract when things were really sideways in the organization and they were offloading star players, right? So they were offloading DJ Moore. They were offloading Christian McCaffrey. The owner was really obsessed with building up draft capital. And so, like, I think the real tell here to me is what he would have gone for a year and a half earlier. You know, like if he had, like they had on the table a 2023 third round pick, a 2024 first round pick, and a 2025 first round pick. So 2 1s and a 3 from the Rams. They wind up turning that down because he's too good a player and he's too young and he's got too much upside and just you don't trade a pass rusher like that. So that's the premise of not trading him in November of 2022. So then you come back and now you've pissed him off because he knows the Rams were going to pay me if they were going to trade for me. And so you try to get him signed the next summer and he's not going to do it because, you know, like he doesn't want to be there anymore. And so like any hope of getting any sort of like reasonable deal had kind of gone out the window. So now, because his contract's up, the Giants are able to get him at a fraction of what the Rams offered for him, right? A 2 and a 5. And I think, was it a 2 and a 5 going back? I think that's what it was, right?
Yes.
So it was like, it's less than a 2, which is crazy, right? Like, it's just like, or I guess it would equate to like a like bottom of the second round pick, right? So you get him for that, where the price was 2 ones and a 3, like 15, 16 months earlier. And what's the difference? Well, the difference is that he's not signed, right? And now you get him on the contract that the Panthers were going to give him, roughly. He gets a little bit more, but you get him on the contract the Panthers were going to give him in the first place. So this is almost like you drafted and developed the player yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just like look at that and like logically it makes all the sense in the world. And now I think he's 25 years old, right? You put him opposite Kayvon Thibodeau and you let those guys grow together. And oh, by the way, in the middle of the line, you've got Dexter Lawrence. And then on the offensive side, you've got a long-term answer at left tackle in Andrew Thomas, who you just re-signed. And you've got Evan Neal, who hasn't lived up to his potential yet. But look, like Andrew Thomas took a couple of years to turn the corner too. So if you hit on Neal, now all of a sudden, both lines of scrimmage, you've got like, you look at how like the Eagles built for all those years, like their stability was tied up in the lines of scrimmage and guys like Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson and Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox. That's essentially what the Giants are doing now.
Yeah.
And I think Burns can be a huge part of it. Like, I just think Burns is the type of pass rusher that doesn't come available very often, which is why the Rams offered what they offered for him in November of 22. And to get him for that much less, I think was, I mean, great on the Giants to do it. Cause I think he's got a chance to now, with being out of like what was a really weird situation where over the last, his last 2 years in Carolina, they had what, I mean, 4 different head coaches, right? Yeah. Now, like, he's got a chance to really take off and fulfill his potential.
We're going to look back at the teams who made deals with the Carolina Panthers over the last 3 years, similarly to like the people who bought NVIDIA, like at the beginning, or like the people who bought GameStop before the Roaring Kitty revolution. Like, it was like, just think about DJ
this.
Moore,
right?
Brian Burns, Christian McCaffrey. There were so many teams whose futures completely changed by virtue of just ripping off a team that was previously one of the worst run franchises in the NFL.
So those three players, the best players on your roster, and you didn't add a first round pick. You moved up, right? Like, DJ Moore is part of the move up.
Right.
In the first round in 2022 to get Bryce Young. And we'll see what happens with Bryce Young. So you moved up in the first, but you did not add a first round pick trading those three guys away.
That's so good.
Which is crazy, right?
It's
as malleable, as open as teams are to dealing off first round picks relative to where they were 10 or 15 years ago. That's wild.
Just imagine, well, think about a team that had that many singular star players and ended up getting, I mean, not nothing. I don't want to minimize what the Panthers got in return for, you know, the Christian McCaffrey trade.
Yeah, because I mean, look, if Bryce Young hits, the rest doesn't matter, right? Like, I guess, like, you can look at it and say, if Bryce Young hits, then all right, like, but I actually have been meaning to go back and like do like the whole, like, you know, like one of those like charts on like what went out and what came in, because you also have to like account for like, one of the things that went out was like Darnell Wright, who could be a really good right tackle, right, for the Bears. And another thing that went out was Roma Dunze. So that trade was actually Adunze, Wright, and DJ Moore. So that's part of the equation. That's what's going out. Well, and Caleb Williams. No. It's Caleb Williams, not Roma Dunze. Scratch Roma Dunze, throw Caleb Williams in there.
I mean, they got DJ Johnson. I mean, we could go through it.
Think this is like sort of a clinic in owner interference. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting because of like, again, like this, the valuation of draft picks and the, I mean, I don't know.
Let's go
That's their three best players that went out the door.
Yeah. All right, Albert. So we're going to go to the worst offseason moves. And again, this was in the staff roundtable. We're going to be doing these all summer. They're pretty fun. You can check them out at SI.com. Matt Verderame, our staff writer, went with Michael Penix. I think a lot of people are there. I think there are a lot of people who are there.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know anything about, and it's hard to believe, this is why I kind of side with Matt, even though I love Penix and I like the pick. Arthur Smith was promised a long-term situation there, right? Like, right. Hey, you're going to have all this dead money with Matt Ryan. You're going to have to wade through the slog. You know, we're getting rid of all these guys. We're flipping it over. You know, you're going to have time. You know, they signed him to an inordinately long contract for a first-time head coach based on the how long that rebuild was going to be. And then, you know, they yanked the rug out from under him after this year and didn't allow him the chance to pick the quarterback and to work with Kirk Cousins, to go out and get somebody. So based on that information, if you're Raheem Morris or you're Terry Fontenot, this is a could be a great long-term move, but it's almost like Dave Gettleman trading back a couple years ago for the Bears to get Justin Fields, where you don't know if you're going to even use that pick. You don't even know if that pick is ever going to help you. So you know, is it great for the franchise? Possibly. Is it great for Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot? I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like an overcorrection. You know what I mean? Like it felt like what they went through the last 3 years. And I'd heard, you know, like Arthur Blank had thrown the term around. Technically, I guess it's corporate jargon, right? Like it's the Home Depot term is succession plan. We want to have succession plans for the people in place. And succession planning is a really important tenet of Arthur Blank's businesses. And so like the people in the building have to hear that, well, we want succession plans. And I don't think Arthur Blank is putting his hand on the scale here, right? Like, and saying like, no, like Kirk Cousins isn't enough. We need to come away with the next guy. But I also think there's an element of knowing what your boss wants. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, and giving your boss what he wants. And in this case, if you're Terry Fontenot, who was there for the 3 years of Arthur Smith, you probably have a pretty good idea of what he is looking for. And that what he's looking for is to leave nothing to chance at quarterback. And, you know, like that's the thing about it is that if this results in 2 to 3 years of Kirk Cousins and then a decade of Michael Penix, it's like what I just said about Bryce Young. Like the rest doesn't matter, right? Like the rest is relatively irrelevant because your shot of getting the eighth pick right is what? 50-50, right? Like, so if you get a quarterback with the eighth pick, a long-term quarterback with the eighth pick, and Dallas Turner or Byron Murphy or Leiatu Latu don't wind up being great players, you're going to look really good.
Right.
So that's the whole thing, you know, is that it's like logically flawed what they did, especially with the needs they have on defense, especially because they couldn't get after the passer next year. And you want to give your new defensive staff with Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake something to work with up front. They're coming from a place where they had Aaron Donald and you know, Kobe Turner and Byron Young as rookies, you know. Leonard Floyd before that. So you want to give them something to work with up front. So logically, it doesn't make a ton of sense. But like because of the importance of the quarterback position, you could wind up looking like geniuses for doing it.
This is a question that I never really asked out loud, but I thought about a little bit. We hadn't talked about it on the podcast. Do you think that the Falcons, based on where Dallas Turner went, and the fact that there were two more teams left who drafted a quarterback, do you think they could have gotten out of that pick if they wanted to?
So, like, my understanding was that the market for the top 10 picks, like, kind of collapsed. That was why the Malik Nabers thing didn't make sense. The market for the top 10 picks completely fell apart after Drake May.
Okay.
After it became clear that Drake May was going to New England.
Right.
Because the Giants and Vikings were both in on moving up and trying to get Drake May third overall. Once that sort of crystallized that wasn't going to happen, the Giants and Vikings backed off, obviously. You know, my understanding is like that for the most part, like the Chargers phones, the Cardinals phones did not ring much when they were on the clock at 5 and 4 respectively. So I just don't know, like, Connor, what would the market force have been that would have had somebody moving up to eight to get? Unless there was a Penix team down there that was preparing to jump over the Vikings, right? Which is possible. But wouldn't that team have, I mean, I don't know.
Like, wouldn't if that you're team the Vikings, wouldn't
like,
that
to
have
me,
been
like,
a pick?
To me, like, the one team I heard connected to Penix a lot was the Raiders, right? Like, so could you have called, I guess you could say you could have called the Raiders and seen, but I don't think anybody was going up for anything but a quarterback at that point, you know?
The Vikings, too, though. I mean, I was curious, you know.
Bowers was the other one that I know. There were a couple of teams that had kind of sniffed around trading up for Bowers, but I think that would have been way too far to go up for him.
Yeah. I just think if you were the Vikings and you really loved J.J. McCarthy, mm-hmm. and the Falcons were like, come on up, because we got Denver and we got a couple of these other teams, Las Vegas, we got them picking soon. Don't you want to make sure you get your guy? You know, like, right. I don't know.
And at that point, you're not asking for a first-round pick, so like maybe... Yeah, maybe you get something done there.
I'm just curious. So Gilberto had that the worst move of the offseason, retaining Mike McCarthy. I half agree, the Cowboys retaining Mike McCarthy as head coach. I half agree. I think retaining him and not empowering him is the worst move. I think retaining him is fine because the guy won 12 games each of the last three seasons. You know,
we talked about this before, too. It's like... It just seems insane that we're talking about a guy who's won 12 games 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this way. And, like, he's got the hottest seat and all of that. Like, I can't remember a guy who had that recent track record being in this position. I mean, maybe I don't even know. Like, I was going to say Wade Phillips, but Wade hadn't won that much.
I mean, could you say the totality of Bill Belichick is as silly? Like, you win 5 Super Bowls and then... You know, you don't go to the playoffs for 2 straight years, and then you get shoved out the door and then buried in an Apple TV docuseries.
That was pretty, yeah. That was pretty, like, I don't know what the word is. Unceremonious. Would that be the word?
What would you do if the MMQB podcast disintegrated and Apple TV gave you a chance to like write the story? By the way, this is prescient. You know why? Because I heard this on the radio this morning. I haven't checked to verify that it's actually true, but apparently, like, Scottie Pippen, a bunch of the people who were on the periphery of The Last Dance are going on.
Ooh, are they going to do a pushback?
They're doing on a tour. Hold on.
A tour?
Yes.
Like a podcast tour?
The No Bull Tour.
The No Bull Tour. Ooh, I like that.
Okay.
Who's in?
Okay, wait. Okay, this already happened. What?
Then how have we not, like...
Apparently it didn't hit the headlines I'm seeing are, this was not what fans expected. Let's see. There's a No Bull Tour website. Like a ticket website that is down, no longer exists. Oh, that's disappointing.
Didn't even get off the ground then?
Doesn't seem like it really got off the ground here. Well, that would have been cool.
The No Bull Tour is more of an appreciation rather than a destruction. This is an SI headline, Fan Nation, by Nick Raguse. Contrary to what generally was expected, this project by the Bulls trio is uplifting. So it was Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, and Luke Longley. It was in Australia? Is that right?
You don't even do it in the United States. I wouldn't bury you in a dock, Albert. That's all I'm saying. I wouldn't bury you in a dock.
You think Michael Jordan called in some favors to make sure it didn't happen in the U.S.? He's pretty powerful.
Pretty bold, though, right? You know, you. But
I mean, the guy reviewing it referred to them as mates. So I think this is Australian. He goes,
comrades.
It wasn't a venting session. They didn't trash Michael over The Last Dance. It was three mates having a laugh, talking careers, and bond. It was great to see.
If you were like,
but Luke Longley's from Australia, so that makes sense that they would do it over there. You know,
that's worse than. Do you remember when Charlie Sheen kind of went off?
I've told you my Scottie Pippen story, right?
No.
So, I was this was probably 2010 or 11, something like that. And I was at NFL Network and I was covering a Bears, I think it was Bears Patriots. There's actually a picture of me on the internet where I'm like basically doing a live shot from like a snowbank and I'm covered. I mean, it's just, we got hit with a massive, massive storm. But the night before the game, I was at this bar and there was like this little roped off area when we first got there with no one in it. And then all of a sudden, like maybe like an hour in, Scottie Pippen comes in and he's just hanging out there behind the rope. And it was the weirdest thing. It was like, what's going on back there? Is that some sort of private party? No, he's just hanging out there behind the rope. And then, you know, like I think at one point a couple of girls were back there. It was just, it was almost like sad to watch because it was like, is he just looking for like adulation or to like feel like it was just the weirdest thing.
Do you think Scotty would come on the pod?
I mean, probably. Do you think he'd bash Michael?
I couldn't get Dat Nguyen to come on this pod, so I wonder if I can get Scottie Pippen to come on this pod.
Oh, man, I forgot about Dat Nguyen. Dat Nguyen was a undersized, try-hard linebacker from Texas A&M. Great college player. Not as great. Yeah, I think he was, if I remember right, when I was covering the Cowboys, he was actually on the strength staff there, if I remember right.
Nice.
I think that's right.
A
really good guy too, but he's one of these guys who, like, the minute he retired, was like 195 pounds. You know, not claiming anything, but like, just like all of a sudden was like 195 pounds.
Same, been there. So this is a long way from where we had Gilberto basically saying, and again, I mean, I think you can agree, you can disagree. I think you keep it coach that wins double digit games and you double down on that. However, I see Gilberto's point for sure. You and I had the same general takeaway for worst offseason move, and that's just, you had nobody hiring Mike Vrabel and Bill Belichick. I had nobody hiring Bill Belichick. I thought about it, I probably would have done the exact same thing. There is such a premium right now on, there are not a lot of really great game shifting, organization shifting head coaches with experience out there. Both of those guys could have taken borderline playoff teams to the playoffs this next year. I would have, like, if I had a guy that was like 2 or 3 years in that I didn't love, I would have made the move, you know?
Yeah, I think it actually points to something that's like been happening in the league for a while, which is, you know, like the owners, these toys that they buy, they're very expensive and they want to be able to play with the toy. And like what they prioritize now, I think they'll say it's winning, but I don't think it's always winning. I think they would take a couple less wins in a lot of cases to feel involved and feel like they're a part of it, you know, and have a happy environment when they go in the building. And, you know, I think the concern with people like Bill and with Mike is that it's going to be a tense environment if you bring the guy in. And that was part of the whole thing with the Falcons job was, you know, I've heard this like everybody else has, that there was a little bit of a campaign going on in that building. Oh, do you really want this guy coming in here? If he comes in here, what's that going to mean for you? Is this going to be a good place to work? You know, so there was that going on and the owner was hearing that, you know, and I think, you know, same sort of thing happened with, you know, with Mike a couple different places, which was, and I think he probably would have gotten the Eagles job if Nick Sirianni were fired, and he probably would have gotten the Chargers job if Jim Harbaugh had stayed at Michigan. But as it was, there were people saying, oh, well, is Mike Vrabel going to come in and just kind of, you know, like take over and take all the oxygen out of the room? And I think if you talk to the guys who actually played for those guys, like talk to guys who played for Vrabel, talk to guys who played for Belichick, is it a tough environment? Yes. Is it for everybody? No. Are you going to get better? Of course you are. And like, I just think that there's a perception of certain people, and I think it's true with Belichick, maybe less true with Vrabel, but like there's a perception that old school doesn't work anymore. And so you're willing to compromise in other ways to make sure you're not going with something old school. And I think in a lot of cases, it's a part of it is that the owner doesn't want something old school because that's not going to allow him to play with his toy, which is a really stupid thing to prioritize. But and it's a principle, by the way, that a lot of these guys would not use in their other businesses, right?
For sure. That's what's like so funny.
If in their other businesses, they were like, I can hire this guy. Like, let's say, like, you know, with Home Depot. Like, somebody goes to Arthur Blank and says, I'm going to hire this new CEO, and he is cutthroat. And he's going to come in, and he's going to be tough. And he's not going to fire everybody, but he's going to get the most out of people. And, like, you know, where there's any inefficiencies, we're going to work on those. And he's going to get the most out of everybody. And in the end, your profit margins are going to be better because this guy came in. And you're going to have a better, you're going to get more out of every person. Do you think Arthur Blank would sign up for that?
He's going to make sure that no one steals the screws from Home Depot.
You know? Right.
Did you ever, right. By the way, did you ever watch people steal from Home Depot, like contractors? It is one of the truly... Oh my God, yes.
Is there video?
No, like you just go into the store, and what's amazing is, I mean, you think about it, right? And it is sort of the state of... It's sort of like the state of things, right? Where margins on construction projects are so low that say you need like, say you're like 13 screws short, you know, like drywall screws. Like you go in there and there are just boxes flipped up and someone just takes a hand. Like it's like one of my favorite things. We, like my wife and I went to buy like tile the other day and like white subway tile. And like people just like go in and they just like, you know, they just leave with like... They're just like, I'm just a little short, so I don't want to buy a whole nother box.
It's visible? Like, you can see it happening?
Yeah, they just like...
You have a fistful of, like, screws?
Or tile, or nails, or... I mean, if you think about it, it's pretty easy to steal nails.
Yeah, it would be.
Like, there's no...
And Home Depot is so wide open that, like...
Yeah.
There's no way they're surveying... It's so huge and wide open that there's no way you could have somebody, like... surveying the whole area, right? There's no way.
I accidentally, and so my dad was with me once, and he was helping me put down mulch in the front, and it was back before the Home Depot mulch section is locked down now because of people like me, but I was just throwing bags of mulch into my truck, and I paid for whatever it was. I paid for 20 and I'm like counting. I'm like 1, 2, 3. And then like you get a text and then you look at something else and you're like 4, 5. And then, you know, I get home and there was like 24 bags and I paid for 20. And my dad is like, you got to go back and you got to give them $12 or whatever it is. Yeah. And so I did. But then the next year that I went back, there were like 4 people standing there and they were like, give us your receipt. And they're like, we have to put it into the car. And I was
and they
like,
load it for
how
you.
How many people just stole like gallons
of mulch? That's actually interesting. You know? So, but that, you know what that means? If you're doing the math on it, that means employing those 2 people is more valuable to the company. Is going to make a bigger difference.
How didn't Bill Belichick appeal to Arthur Blank? Bill Belichick would have stopped the screw theft. He would have stopped the nail theft. He would have stopped all of it. He would have cleaned up Home Depot and the Falcons and brought them back to the play. Wouldn't that be, that would have been the move, right? If you're Arthur Blank and you know that Bill Belichick wants power above and beyond coaching, but you say, sorry, dude, I already got a GM. Actually, I already have an OC that I like too. But what I want you to do is I want you to organize the team. I want you to rally the team. And I also want you to be the CFO of Home Depot. And I want you to come in and I want you to just go into my stores and I want you to, set things straight. Now he would love my Home Depot. My Home Depot is clockwork. My Home Depot is a good Home Depot.
I mean, I just like, and you know what's crazy about it too? Like, so, you know, we're talking about like the environment in the building, and there are some guys who I would say there are some guys who like, and this is obvious, everybody's seen the roast and everything else. There are some guys who didn't like playing for Bill, right? Like that exists. There's no question.
But there are guys who don't, like, sorry to cut you off, but there are guys who don't like playing for every coach.
Right.
And that's what drives me nuts about the Belichick slander. And I think why both of you and
Well, it's just like so much is about... So this is like kind of like a generational thing too. Like, it's... When do we get to a point where personal comfort is valued so much more than performance, right? At some point, don't you want to get the most out of people?
Yes.
And this is a guy who's consistently shown. Now, I understand if you don't want to give him personnel control based on what happened in New England at the end, right?
Right.
Like, I totally get that. But my understanding is Bill was willing to do like the Andy Reid thing when Andy Reid went from Philly to Kansas City, where he said, I don't want to do scouting anymore. I don't want to be running personnel meetings anymore. And to give people an idea of what Bill was doing at the end in New England, like into November and December, he was running draft meetings on Friday mornings with the scouts.
Right.
So he was in there with Elliott Wolf and Matt Groh and all those guys, like running, like, hey, this Friday we're doing tight ends. Next Friday we're doing receivers. The Friday after that we're doing the D linemen in season, right? So he was willing to back off of that, right? And just coach. And doesn't that sound ideal? Is if you can bring in somebody who either bring in somebody who can speak his language or teach the guys that you have to speak the language and then empower that person to get Bill the players he needs. Now all of a sudden you've got Bill the coach who I don't think has lost his fastball, right?
Yeah.
It's wild. But, it really is. But
I'm talking about you're right. You're right that there is a generational shift. There's all this kind of stuff. That's all happening. But people's
personal comfort is being put above performance is the problem.
Correct.
I think.
But I think that the real problem is that it's sample size. It's pure sample size. Bill Belichick coached for 23 years. So how many players did he coach? What is the likelihood that you're going to be able to call somebody from one of those teams that doesn't like him and say, ah, oh, good guy, bad guy, blah, 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 blah. Okay? Ben McAdoo coached for 2 seasons. It's going to be harder to find that many people who didn't like Ben McAdoo. It's going to be harder to find that many people who didn't like any of these guys. He coached for 2.5 decades. So there's going to be a lot of guys who don't like him because he coached a lot of guys.
And we say all that. After like the Apple TV documentary, how many people came out in like fierce defense of him?
Yeah.
A lot. Like, you heard the way Rodney Harrison talked, right? Like, I just don't know, man. Like, I just, you know, so I look at that and then I look at Vrabel, and the Vrabel thing's almost worse because Vrabel was loved by his players.
Yeah.
Not liked, loved by his players. And I understand like Tennessee's changing some things around and we've already been down the road about them firing him, right? Like, so we don't need to rehash all of that. But if your personal, like if you believe, which you should, I go and look at players that played for him, right? Like the players that he inherited, guys like Taylor Lewan in Tennessee that he inherited, that he didn't draft, that love him, right? Go around and ask all of them. And if all the players love him and things were a little bit uncomfortable at the upper reaches of the organization, isn't that just a small inconvenience? If the players are locked in and ready to go every week and you're getting the most out of them and they love the guy and they'll run through a wall for the guy, isn't that way more important than how like somebody in marketing feels about like the way the building feels?
I agree.
I don't know. I mean, to me it is, you know, it's like, it goes back to this thing. Like, and I remember this and, obviously you remember Brian Hoyer, Connor, but the, you know, like for people who don't, like Hoyer was a backup quarterback in the NFL for like, and he just finished up. He's a great guy, 15 years, right? So he played for both Kyle Shanahan and Bill Belichick. And I thought this was a really interesting point that he made. He said that he thought that the two of them were the same. And he said this to me before Kyle got the 49er job. This was like when he was with the Falcons. And so Hoyer said to me, he's like, they're the same guy. And he's like, they both have a level of expertise on their side of the ball, but they can coach any position on the field. They're the smartest guys I've been around. But here's the thing with them, right? He's like, he goes, there were times when I was in New England when I would walk down the hallway and Bill would storm right past me and he wouldn't acknowledge me and his head would be down. And you'd walk away and you'd be like, did I do something wrong? Is there a problem here? Right? And Hoyer eventually figured out that's not what it was. It was, there was something that, that Belichick was doing and that thing took precedence. And so, you know, he had somewhere to go and he wasn't going to waste his time with whatever, with, you know, a handshake or a hug or whatever. So that would happen, you know, in the building, right? And Hoyer said to me, Kyle's the same way. He's just so smart and he's got like such a one-track mind that there'll be those moments. And if you are a player or you are a coach who cannot handle that, who needs constant affirmation, you cannot play for him because eventually it will become a problem. And Hoyer goes, and there are guys like that. You wouldn't, most, no one's going to admit to being like that. He's like, but there are guys like that. And so like you have to have the right sort of players there, the right sort of team there, right? But I think it sort of speaks to what the problem is. Like how many people, when they see a coach walking down the hallway with his head down, are going to carry that with them for the next week? How many people need the affirmation of like eye contact and a hug? I think that's what like a lot of this comes down to, you know, with Belichick at least. Vrabel less so, but with Belichick at least. So I just don't know. I think it's, in a lot of cases, it's like, it's these surface things that are being prioritized over the substance of what goes into building a great football team.
After a bad podcast, Albert has never once called me and said, it's okay, pick your head up. I always get a text about 4 or 5 hours later that just says, you know, cut the shit, pick it up.
And we're moving on to next week.
Oh, man.
But I think it's, I just think it's an interesting thing, you know, like, and, it, like, and it's like, I think there's probably more like, cause athletes didn't come out the same way that they did 15 or 20 years ago. So there probably is some element of needing, of neediness there on the part of today's athlete and even probably some coaches. Right. But like, there's no question the guy gets the most out of people, you know,
it's true.
Did that for a long time.
And it's, you were willing to sacrifice a good season for that. Bottom line, you were willing to sacrifice a playoff caliber season potentially for that. And now Mike Vrabel's helping the Browns. So good luck, everybody. You know,
I mean, I actually think like this is part of what Jim Harbaugh's problem was.
Yeah. I would equate Vrabel and Harbaugh similarly.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vrabel, like, I think it's part of Vrabel's problem was like people saw what happened in San Francisco and were like, and I remember talking to, you know, I don't think he'll mind if I say this. Like, I remember talking to John Harbaugh about it, and he was like a little upset at something I had said about Jim. I had written about it, and it was like, and I said something about like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but you know, it was something along the lines of like, you know, after all the awkwardness of San Francisco, and John took it, and rightfully so, it's his brother, John took exception to it, and he said, ask the players what they thought of Jim.
Yeah,
he said, just go ask the players what they thought of Jim. Ask the players at Michigan what they think of Jim. And like, I think Vrabel would say the same thing. Ask the players in Tennessee what they think of me. You know, it's interesting, you know, because I do think like a lot of times they won't admit it, but like for a lot of times it comes down to the owner's comfort level too. You know, and Jim Harbaugh had an issue with an owner in San Francisco. And I think Jed York's gotten much better at the job for having gone through that, right? Like, and probably has allowances for Kyle Shanahan now from having gone through that with Jim Harbaugh. You know, but like a lot of times it does come down to the owner's comfort level with, hey, this is who I want to come and see when I come into the office every day, you know, or for however many times I'm there a week.
That's why everyone loves the MMQB podcast. Between me, between Albert, between producer Shelby, it's like, it's like the end of Sting and the Police. Like, we're just MFing each other. We're flipping tables over, but it results in a good product, which is why we keep coming back. Thank you guys very much for listening to us this week. As always, we'll be back every Monday with a new recording Monday for posting Monday or sometimes early Tuesday episode. And then we have Matt and Gilbert.
And don't put any rocks in your shoes, kids.
Don't put any rocks in your shoes when you're going to fight. Don't fight. You know, but if you have to, don't put rocks in your shoes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.